Now on the stage show, we're going behind the scenes, as we do from time to time, to see what goes into making a stage production. And today, you and I are meeting Richard Varbre, who's been lighting live shows for, I don't know, how long? 30 years, do you reckon?
It would be about 30 years. I did 15 years as a hobbyist, as an amateur, just for fun.
Full-time. Well, that's when you and I first met.
Yes, yeah, about 30 years
you
ago.
You were doing lighting at the University of Melbourne.
That's correct.
And around the place. So how did you manage to sort of get yourself into the professional side of things?
I guess I persisted with it long enough. Having done it as a hobby for such a long period of time, it's like any sort of private practice. You build a client base and you make contacts with people and connections, and the workload increased. I was approached to do more productions, and then all of a sudden I was getting paid for some of them.
And did you do a professional qualification, or did you sort of learn on the job?
I did not do a professional qualification, which is pretty much an older model of lighting design. There's a few older people working in the industry who haven't had any professional training or very little professional training. But the model these days is pretty much you go through an institution and you learn in an educational environment, in an educational setting. But in my day, it's really only one or two professional production courses.
Now, when you do the lighting design on a show, do you also operate? Do you actually go in every night and push the switches up and down?
Conventionally, no. Most of the lighting consoles these days are fully automated, so it's basically a form of computer that's driving the lighting. So most venues have a lighting operator who is sitting there just pressing a button at the command of the stage manager.
Right. So the way this works is that you lock the cue, what's called the lighting cue, into the computer. That is, bring those lights up to 50% and take these other ones down and switch on the special red one. And that's all locked in, and that's called lighting cue 3. And when the stage manager says lighting cue 3, some guy just, or woman, presses a button and it all just magically happens.
That's correct. It's all pre-programmed these days, which I feel is a great loss to theatre, because theatre is a live event. And there are live transactions every night, and there's variability to performances. Well, you'd hope that there's at least a little bit of life in the show.
Yeah.
And so I think it's really important that the lighting is able to respond in real time to that. But unfortunately, the exigencies of the modern world are such that you can't have the lighting designer sitting there every night operating. So they employ a technician who really is just pressing a button.
Because a skilled designer can cope with a decision by an actor, say, to suddenly go down stage where he or she has never been before and sort of follow them just by taking some lights out and putting other lights in.
Yeah, it's totally possible to do that. Some consoles are easier to do that kind of busking on than others.
Is that what it's called?
Improing. Yeah, like you impro. Busking. Busk the lights. And, in some music concerts, the operators are still busking. They're just responding to what they feel in the moment. Others are all very highly programmed as well. There's a few companies that I work for where I do still operate the lights, but it's rare. The
right.
More common occurrence is that I see a production up to opening night and then I walk away and I go to the next production.
All right, let's backtrack. Suppose I've been appointed director of, say, Macbeth. I'm going to do Macbeth and you're going to be the lighting designer, and we start rehearsals in June, but I've got some ideas now. So do I talk to you about this?
Absolutely. So most directors that I work with will have a pretty clear idea of how they want to see the show staged, and will have conversations with me and with the set designer and the sound designer and the costume designer, and we'll work on a design concept for the production. And that will form a pretty strong basis for the lighting design. But at that stage, I'm nowhere near drafting a plan or thinking about cues or anything like this. It's just really rough concepts. And then I go to rehearsals. Well, if there's a script, I read the script. Obviously, with Macbeth, there is a script, well-established.
Yeah. A well-thumbed script, yeah.
But some obviously devised productions, you don't have a script to draw off. But certainly the script is a good starting point for clues as to what the lighting requires. Some designers respond better to the script than others. I find myself responding much better to what I see on the floor of a rehearsal.
It makes sense to me, because you're about making pictures.
Yes.
Aren't
and you?
You
sort of need to see where people are going to be in space. And the other really integral factor of lighting that I really try to focus on in my work is the emotional pitch of a production. So where it's landing emotionally at any one particular time, I try to reflect that in the lighting design. You can't get that from words on a page. It needs to be moved and spoken and breathed and lived. And once I can see that in front of me, I get an emotional response, and then I try to put that into the lighting so that it is basically telling the same story that the performers are, right, are telling and that the
director
is telling.
So suddenly it gets menacing or melancholy or cheers up or whatever happens. And that's got to be part of the total effect of the theatrical experience.
Yeah, which, I mean, you know, you can, one extreme of it is somebody's angry. The cliche would be you put on red lights, but that's not necessarily how lighting designers actually play. That's a sort of a very old-fashioned style of lighting design. I think it's more about where the tone of the piece is landing. So
I quite like it. I think Macbeth coming in angry, red lights, I'm seeing it working. So tell me a bit about the history of theatre lighting. We are working in the electrical age. Before electricity, was there theatre lighting?
There was theatre lighting. There was limelight. And
what's limelight? So being in the limelight is a theatrical expression. What is the limelight?
So they would light pieces of lime, I believe, and they'd be used as footlights in a theatre and candles. And many theatres burnt down through the centuries. It was not a safe working environment, that's for sure.
Because the candles caught fire.
Yeah, and there's drapery and there's wood and timber everywhere, and it was not a great health and safety situation.
There's a reason why Shakespeare's stage, though, the globe had no roof, because you're acting during the day. So in Shakespeare's day, I guess there isn't a lot of special lighting, but somewhere along the way, people developed these techniques for lighting.
Gaslight was also used once gas came in the late 19th century. That was a feature in theatre lighting.
And what's the biggest change, apart from the computerisation of the desk, what have been the other big changes?
The largest change in the last 10 years has been the introduction of LED lighting. It's much better for the environment. It uses less electricity, and it requires fewer globe changes, so the globes last longer. And until recently, the technology was a bit rudimentary. It was pretty hard to shape light or to get subtlety in the colour mix. And that has really come along in leaps and bounds in the last couple of years. So most theatres are swapping out a lot of their old incandescent theatre lanterns and replacing them with LED lanterns.
Because they do use heaps of electricity. You need to put in something called three-phase power when you're using those. And you warm the lights up, don't you? I forgot. It's all coming back to me. You warm the lights up.
That's the thing of the past now. So most LED lights, they run cool, so they're very low temperature as well, which means you can put them right next to drapery and not worry about that going up in flames as well. It's quite a revolution, actually. And intelligent lighting is the other one. So moving lights, being able to select a target and hit it anywhere on the stage.
Now, you've just done a show at 45 Downstairs in Melbourne, which is set in the future without electricity.
It's true. It's called Mr. Burns, a post-electric play.
So how did you think your way into this task of thinking your way into a future in which there is no electrical light? Because electrical light is your tool.
That's exactly right. Well, it was a challenge, that's for sure. I did it with chicanery and trickery and obfuscation. I did my best to hide whatever theatre lights were used, which we used quite a number, but they were well out of sight of the audience's eyes. And in most venues, that wouldn't be such a problem because you've got wings or you've got lighting bars overhead that you can hide them behind. But at 45 Downstairs, it's a very exposed space. It's basically a long white room with a white ceiling. You see everything. You see all the theatre lights. So we managed to be quite tricky in where we hid those theatre lights. And we use some unconventional lighting sources as well. So not specifically theatre lights, but different types of lights that could do a multitude of jobs, I guess, is the best way to put it. We used a lot of candles and lanterns and things like that, basically, to give the idea of where light was coming from. But then the actual heavy lifting was done by actual theatre lights that were hidden away.
So if people are thinking of making their living, trying to make their living in lighting, you're living proof you can make your living doing this kind of work. What's the range of jobs that you might work on in order to put together a living? So you do theatre. Would you do other kinds of live events too?
Yes, I've done some dance and I've done some live music and some contemporary music and a little bit of opera as well. But theatre is the world that I know and love the best, and it's where my contacts are. So that's where the bulk of my work is. And anyone that I would like to work as a lighting designer, I'd suggest just get as much experience as you can and really work on a lot of jobs. Even if it doesn't bring you immediate joy, I think there's always something that you can learn from every job you do.
I'll just share with the listener your capacity to do many jobs. The secret about you and me, Richard, is that you and I did a production of Hamlet way back in the olden days, and you were the lighting guy, but you also the grave, you were the grave digger, and you set the lighting for that scene and then came grumbling out of the lighting box, stomped down through the audience, did the grave digger scene, and then went back and set the lights for the next scene.
It's one of my finest multitasking moments.
Yeah, it's one of my fondest memories. Richard Varbrae, thank you for being my guest.
Thank you for having me, Michael.
On the stage show, lighting designer Richard Varbrae, a man for all seasons, taking us behind the scenes there. And that show he mentioned, Mr. Burns, a post-electric play, is actually back. It's playing at 45 Downstairs in a return season. That's in Melbourne until the 19th of May.